This episode is brought to you by State Farm. If you're a small business owner, you know that it isn't just your business, it's your life. And whatever your business might be, you want someone who understands. That's why you might want to check out State Farm Small Business Insurance. Why? Because State Farm agents are small business owners too, living and working in your community. That means they know what it takes to help you personalize your policies for your small business needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Tornadoes, they're just like kind of metal. Like they're loud, they're destructive. There's no moving a tornado. It's the force that you have to deal with. You know, like when you're in a concert and it's just like way too loud.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the image I have of a tornado. They're there to punch you in the gut and then they run away.
I guess we should intro ourselves real quick. I'm Noam Hassenfeld. You're Brian Resnick. This is Unexplainable.
Yeah.
And you've been reporting on tornadoes. What is the big unexplainable about tornadoes?
We just don't know when they're going to show up. Like tornadoes, they are awesome if you get to watch them from afar.
Right.
When they come for you, it's horrifying and quite deadly. And they don't come with a lot of warning.
Okay.
So recently I talked to this guy. He lives in East Nashville, Tennessee. His name's Mo Odwani.
It was March 3rd. It was actually my mom's birthday. I always remember it.
It's midnight and he wakes up.
The night before, we hadn't really heard anything about like really strong, severe weather, just the normal, typical Tennessee weather.
And his phone is going crazy.
When I woke up, it freaked me out. I was like, what is that? But it was loud enough that I woke up.
He looks down at it and it says, oh, there's the tornado warning. You should seek shelter.
So I look out the window and I don't really see anything.
Mo has gotten these before, and they haven't always preceded a tornado.
Everybody thought, oh, it's probably going to be nothing. So then I was like, you know what? Let's just be safe. I'll just go down to the garage.
There's a few other residents there, and at first it seems quiet, and they don't really think anything's going to happen. And then it comes.
You can feel the wind kind of change.
You know, they're inside this garage, so they don't see it, but they hear it.
The whole building started to shake. It sounded like a freight train.
It's one of the loudest things he's ever heard in his life, and he's really scared.
I was holding onto the bike rail in our garage, and we were just like praying and yelling and like fear of death. We're just like, this is it. You know, like this is how I'm going out.
The next day he goes out into his community and he sees how terrible it really was.
There's so much damage, and it was like a bomb went off in East Nashville. Everything was destroyed.
25 people died in those storms, and he remembers just thinking.
Like usually sirens go off, but we just never heard any sirens.
He just wonders, like, wow, if I didn't get this alert on my phone, would I have been in greater danger?
My Apple warning basically at that point could have saved my life. You know, something worse could have happened.
But even the phone alert, he says it only came between 7, maybe 10 minutes before the tornado actually hit. He wonders like, oh, wow, if my phone wasn't with me, you know, what if it was in the other room? Like, what would have happened?
Is this just like how it goes? I mean, only getting 7 minutes in the middle of the night to get down to safety, is that normal?
Sadly, yes, this is not an exceptional or rare story.
Huh.
Forecasters are just really bad at this. And when these warnings do come, they often don't precede a tornado. 70, 80% of warnings don't actually come before a tornado. They're false alarms.
What? So you're saying people usually only have like 7 minutes to get to safety, and then like three quarters of the time there's no tornado, even when we do get the warning?
Yeah, this is where we are.
How is that possible? How do we not understand this better?
The heart of it is actually kind of simple.
Okay.
Tornadoes come from thunderstorms, but meteorologists, they can look at two thunderstorms. These thunderstorms will look identical, but one will produce a tornado and the other one won't. And they really don't know what makes the difference.
Huh. So what do scientists know about how tornadoes form?
Yeah, I was wondering that too. So I talked to Robin Tanamachi. She's a meteorologist at Purdue University in Indiana, and she knows everything there is to know about tornadoes.
I teach mainly atmospheric science, radar meteorology, and severe storms meteorology.
She's been fascinated by them her whole life. She told me this story of when she was a little girl, there was this tornado captured on the news by a news helicopter.
We're about 3/4 of a mile from the actual touchdown at this time. This is really spectacular.
And what did I see on the screen? But it was this gorgeous helical tornado, and it was live.
I'm going to have to leave this area here. The debris is drifting my way here.
Please do, Max.
And I believe at this point, the helicopter pilot is realizing, whoa, we've got a live tornado on our hands. And so they're maneuvering around it, trying to keep a safe distance from it.
Right now, the tornado is located over a wooded area, and it is ripping entire pine trees into the air, thousands of feet.
She remembers just like thinking, I can't get enough of that. She couldn't look away.
My thought was just, what is it that's making this happen? You know, what is it in the environment that's necessitating that this thing exists, and what makes it so powerful? I really wanted answers to those questions.
I know you would ask me some questions here. Unfortunately, I've been watching the tornado instead of where I'm going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of questions. What's Robin learned so far?
Well, obviously, she hasn't gotten to like that holy grail of being able to predict and know everything about the formation of a single tornado. Mm-hmm. But on the bigger picture, she does know where they come from.
Okay.
Mainly, they come from here. They come from the U.S.
There are definitely hot spots all over the world, but the United States by far gets the most of them.
Why are there so many tornadoes in the U.S.?
So like I said, tornadoes come from thunderstorms.
A thunderstorm you can think of as an organism that ingests and eats warm, moist air.
And warm, moist air, we got that in spades. That comes from the Gulf of Mexico.
Okay.
And that's moving north from the Gulf.
This tide of moist air that just keeps sloshing northward from the Gulf of Mexico over the southern tier of states.
And then it hits two dry streams. So one, we got dry air from the Rockies. And two,
we've got dry air coming off the Mexican plateau.
So that warm, moist air from the Gulf, it meets those other two streams and gets pulled up into them. But those two streams are moving in different directions. So all that air begins to twist and condense and form clouds.
It will start to rotate just on its own spontaneously. That air will be torqued and twisted.
In my head, I'm envisioning, you know, like Looney Tunes when the three cartoon characters all like run into a big brawl and it kind of like spirals into a cyclone.
Yeah, something like that. I'm imagining something more of like a wizard summoning these air streams that converge into a cauldron and create these vortexes. But we have different brains.
How does Robin think about it?
It's like a big barber pole in the middle where the air is rising, but it's also twisting as it goes up.
This is the heart of a supercell.
Supercell?
Yeah. Supercells are these mega thunderstorms that spawn tornadoes.
Okay.
They rotate, so they're like kind of like these mini hurricanes. And the big question is like, how do you take this big kind of lumbering rotation in the sky from these supercells, and how does that get concentrated down into this vortex that actually extends from the cloud all the way to the ground?
Okay, so we know the U.S. has all these supercells, these big twisting thunderstorms, and those sort of give birth to tornadoes. So do scientists have any bright ideas here? Like, what sets this process off?
Well, before they even get to there, it's more like they don't see what sets it off.
That process is probably happening on timescales of just a few seconds or less.
All this happens so fast. Weather radar, like our number one tool for observing storms, it just can't see it.
Why can't radar see tornadoes?
Well, one part of the problem is like it basically picks up on moisture, rain, and you can infer things from rain, like wind speed, like you determine how fast that rain is moving, but it's like this incomplete picture of a storm. The other problem with radar is physically radar is this dish that spins. And so every time it spins, it like takes an observation of the thing that it's observing, like a storm. Mm-hmm. But that takes a few moments for it to spin.
You can have, you know, a big lazy vortex in one scan, and by the time the radar swings around again, you've got a tornado.
The effect is kind of like if you were watching a dancer under a strobe light. Hmm. The dancer being the storm and the strobe light being like the radar that can only capture it in certain moments. So the dancer starts dancing, she's spinning, and you get a slice of it. And then the dish rotates a bit and it sees a bit. And then it misses a bit, and then it sees a bit, and then it misses a bit.
We're scanning it too slowly to see this very rapid process that's happening.
Whatever causes the tornado to spawn, it often happens when that dancer is in the dark.
You're saying that whatever happens to jumpstart this tornado, it can happen so fast that it could happen in the dark of the strobe light, like in that moment when the radar dish has its back turned?
Yeah. Researchers are so in the dark, like they're not always sure if like the tornado forms from the storm cloud down or from the surface of the earth up, or if like kind of both things happen at the same time and then they connect in this explosive way. It's just the basic idea here is like what we can't see, we can't predict.
A lot of times this process is either invisible or opaque.
It's like a magician's sleight of hand trick. Like, again, like imagine two thunderstorms that look identical and one produces a tornado. Well, the one that's producing a tornado is like performing a trick that we just can't see.
Huh.
And that's really why tornado warnings are only sent out when a tornado is seemingly detected.
Our current paradigm for warning for tornadoes is something called warn-on detection, meaning either it's indicated by radar or somebody in the field has phoned in and reported it. So the tornado has been detected, you issue a warning.
Wait, but I thought you said there were a lot of false alarms. Like the majority of the time it's sent out, it's a false alarm. So how could it be a false alarm if they detect the tornado and then alert people?
Oh, it's because often when a tornado is indicated by radar, it's not a real tornado. It's a false detection.
and it's
a false detection for all the reasons why I said radar isn't that great. It just gets it wrong. It just can't see everything that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And these false alarms, like it's not just a meteorological problem. It's a psychological problem too.
You know, like the boy who cried wolf syndrome. If you issue too many tornado warnings, people start to not trust them as much. We need to bring that false alarm rate down so that when we do issue a tornado warning, we're extremely confident people are actually going to take action.
So if scientists are already struggling to predict tornadoes, and then they're sort of training people to react to tornado alerts in exactly the wrong way with this boy who cried wolf syndrome, I mean, how do you solve the tornado problem?
So for one, Robin's really pushing for just better, faster radar that can scan areas mm-hmm. more quickly, and maybe then it can pick up on more clues to just better see what's happening in these storms and to see that moment of tornado formation.
Like a faster strobe light.
Yeah, faster strobe light.
Mm-hmm.
But really what meteorologists want is like better prediction, better like artificial intelligence that can just look at a storm and model it in a computer and then press fast forward and see what will happen. If they can do that, then they can warn on forecast and say, like, 30 minutes from now, we've run the computer models and this storm is going to create a tornado and you should get out of the way.
Yeah, we'd love it if people could have us up to 30 minutes to an hour. I mean, that's where you make a completely different set of decisions.
And I assume to get a better AI system, you just got to input tons and tons of tornadoes all over the country, right?
Yeah. And a big challenge here is that tornadoes are so varied. They come in all these shapes and sizes.
From very skinny funnels that are only, you know, a couple hundred feet wide, all the way up to 2.5 miles wide, I believe was the widest one on record.
They seem to be very sensitive to local environmental conditions. So what forms a tornado in one area might not form it in another. Maybe just like the presence of trees changes the equation. Mm. And tornadoes behave differently in different parts of the country. That huge spectrum makes studying tornadoes really cool, but it also makes studying them like really hard.
Yeah. And if you need to get a bunch more tornadoes to input into a new system to figure out how to predict tornadoes, how do you find those tornadoes if we don't know how to predict tornadoes?
Yeah, yeah. That's a funny conundrum here. Like, we need more data from the tornadoes themselves, but we don't know when they're going to show up. We need to be prepared to show up when they do, because to get that data, we solve this in the most badass way possible. We have to go storm chasing.
Storm chasing?
Storm chasing. After the break.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You've heard it before. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. But it's more than just a tagline, because State Farm agents are small business owners themselves who live and work in your community. And if you're in the market for small business insurance, who better to work with than an agent who understands what it takes? State Farm agents can help you create a personalized insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. Talk to your local State Farm agent today about small business insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. We must be
an unexplainable.
Unexplainable, we're back. Hey, Brian.
Hey.
So you've been talking about tornadoes, how scientists still can't really predict when they're going to happen. And before the break, you said that ultimately we just need a lot more data here, right? Like more scientists studying more tornadoes?
Hell yeah.
You know, it's always interesting when the sirens come out, the normal public goes down to the basement and the scientists go to the roofs.
So this is Jeff Weber. He is an atmospheric scientist. He's stood on a few rooftops. He's chased a few storms. He actually chased one recently with his 12-year-old son.
Admittedly, I planted the seed, but he is really into it. And after seeing his first tornado last week, he can't get enough. He wants to just keep doing it. So,
oh my God, what happened on this day?
Well, we're in the house. Tornadoes were not forecast to develop anywhere near us for this day, but a tornado warning went off on my phone. As an atmospheric guy, I have about 5 weather apps, and my phone started blowing up with this tornado warning. I'm like, a tornado warning? Well, that doesn't seem right. So I tell my son to run out into the backyard and see if he can see it. We did take some video, and 5 seconds later, I hear him shrieking at the top of his voice.
I see it! I see it!
I do too! So we all run out, take pictures from the backyard, and I'm like, hey, buddy, you know, this is pretty cool. He goes, we got to go. We got to chase it. Let's go. And so we ran to the truck, and as we were driving over the top of the hill, we could see the whole layout of the storm. We could see the tornado from the top of the cloud deck all the way to the surface of the ground. We could see the hail shaft. We could see the heavy rain. We could see the shelf cloud rotating above the tornado.
Oh, my God.
By the time we got up close to it, it was spectacular. We could see the rotation. We could see the dirt being dug up from the ground. It was just an incredible event.
My heart's pumping just listening to that.
It is awe-inducing. It is truly awesome. It is... My mouth is like open as I'm staring at this thing spinning. It's amazing. It's unreal.
What was it like to share that with your son?
It was one of the highlights of my life. Oh. To be chasing a tornado and to see my son so excited about it. I think I have a future atmospheric scientist on my hands.
I see it!
So to start simply here, why is chasing tornadoes so important? Like, why can't we study them more remotely?
Well, the most important things for a tornado to form is temperature, humidity, wind direction, and speed. But we need them at the surface, we need them at the upper atmosphere, and we need them at levels throughout the entire atmosphere. And so to get that complete data set all around the tornado at all the different levels is very difficult.
Why don't we have this now? Is it just like our typical weather radar doesn't take on all this information?
It's difficult to get this complete data set because tornadoes don't stay on the ground for a long period of time, and we don't know in advance where they're going to show up. So if you want to do a contrast with hurricanes, for example, they take days, if not weeks, to cross the Atlantic. And we have the luxury of that time to fly planes through the eye wall of that hurricane and get those measurements. With a tornado, we don't have that luxury of time. They might be on the ground for as little as a few minutes. And so to be able to marshal all of those instrumentations and planes or sensors, it's very difficult.
So if we did have all the right equipment in place and at the right time and we caught a perfect tornado, would that be enough?
Heavens no. We need dozens, if not hundreds. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like snowflakes. You know, no two tornadoes are exactly alike. For example, of 100 tornadoes, you get 98 of them that spin clockwise, but you're going to get a couple of them that even spin counterclockwise.
What?
and we have no idea why. I think as we get greater technology, in particular with drones, either on the ground or in the air, it will give us a greater capacity to collect these data sets without putting humans in harm's way. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hopeful that over the next decade or two, that we'll have more complete data sets so that not only can we look at one data set of the tornado, why it formed, but we can look at nuances and subtleties and differences on why one tornado formed different than another one. And that's when we can unravel the mystery.
Why are you confident that it's just a problem of more data? Could it also be the case that these storms are just so chaotic, so sensitive to very slight variations in geography or place or conditions where they're just very hard to predict and we might not ever get much better at this problem?
Yeah, I appreciate that perspective. I'm a firm believer, though, that science can solve a lot of these problems if they have the proper data sets to analyze it. We know what we're dealing with. And if we can close the box, so to speak, around the tornado, we should be able to explain what's going on. We have a very good understanding of thermodynamics and instability, but we just don't know quite how they're interacting with each other at these finite scales that a tornado is operating in.
You're saying that like our atmosphere is knowable, like things that we can measure. We just need finer and finer grained resolution.
Exactly. There's no new physics being brought about by a tornado. The atmosphere is very well understood. The laws of physics are very well understood. We just need to see at these smaller scales how they interact to create the tornado.
I love how like a lot of this boils down to, well, to better understand tornadoes, we need to keep chasing them, right? Was that what I'm hearing here?
Most definitely. Just photographs from the public can be incredibly helpful because we're still at that point where photographs can gain insight into the structure of the tornado.
I don't know if we should like be telling people on a podcast to like take photos of tornadoes, right?
Only if you're trained and know what you're doing. They are very dangerous, but if you approach them from the backside, that's the smart approach.
They should be going away from you, I imagine.
You're right. You should be chasing the tornado, not having the tornado chase you.
This episode was produced and edited by Brian Resnick, Noam Hassenfeld, and me, Meredith Hodnott, with extra help from Bird Pinkerton. Mandy Nguyen checked the facts, Christian Ayala sound designed the tornadoes, and Noam scored the episode with some help from 3,000 Rivers. Lauren Katz heads up our newsletter, and Liz Kelly Nelson is the VP of Vox Audio. You can sign up for our newsletter at vox.com/unexplainable and email any thoughts you might have about the show to unexplainable@vox.com. Unexplainable is part of the Vox Media Podcast Network, and we'll see you next Wednesday.